was going to describe or discuss the game. It was a Thursday, and you know that there was a big, nowadays they have Thursday night games, so it was going to be a Thursday night game, and the Eagles were playing against some other team. And he was driving from New York to get to Maryland. He had to drive from Philadelphia, and he was able to catch about an hour and a half of the pre-game show on the radio discussing that evening's game. And the sportscast was going back and forth about how big the game was. It's very crucial to that year. Did they say just now it's starting? What did they say?
Yeah.
Starting. Okay. Is that very crucial to that point of the year? And they were discussing whether or not they felt that the Eagles cornerbacks, who were both rookies at the time, you know, this, you guys understand the language even cornerbacks? You follow what I'm saying? Not really.
What's quarterback?
Quarterback is the guy who takes the wide receiver.
It's a wide receiver.
Okay. You know curling? You know the sport curling?
Of course.
Okay. I don't know anybody. Anyways, the two quarterbacks on the defense, the starting quarterbacks, were both rookies. And they were talking about whether or not the rookie factor would play a role in this big playoff implication game. The other guy, Torscast, says, what are you joking? Rookies, this is week 12 of the season. They've been playing for 11 weeks against this top quarterbacks, top wide receivers on the other team. The fact that they were rookies game 1, 2, and 3, but they've been playing for 11 weeks already against NFL talent. They no longer consider rookies. That was what the other person had suggested. They went back and forth, and Rabbi Bennett said he was shocked to hear the conclusion remarks from the other sportscaster. He said, a person will always be a rookie until the offseason. Until you have your first offseason, you'll always be a rookie. You can play for 80 games in the NBA season. You can play for 16 weeks and playoffs in the NFL season. Until you have your first offseason, you will always be a rookie. What makes you a rookie? Why isn't Austin didn't help? So he was discussing about the importance of, until you had the opportunity to sit back and reflect on what took place, on what happened, you're a rookie. You have no idea what anything means. You don't understand how exactly it worked out. There's a lot of things you still have left to the imagination. You have to figure out. And until you have the opportunity to sit back and have an off season to really, you know, to let everything sink in, until that point in time, you are a rookie. That's what he wants, Jess. And that's the same idea, which I'm going to start with right now. As right now, you're about to start your off season. Whether or not you're coming back from the year, now you guys are all on his mind. We had baseball vacation. We had Sukkot's vacation. Sukkot doesn't count because you just started the year. His vacation counts. We were there for a long time. But you also knew you were coming back to Eretz Yisrael. You knew you were coming back. You guys knew that it was going to be, it was part of the year still. It was not an end. It was just a break. But now it's ended. Even guys are coming back to bed. If they end the Shana, they come back to bed. It's a different thing. It's an off-season. And the way you deal with your off-season is going to be extremely crucial for what's going to happen next season. Whether you are in Eretz Yisrael, whether you are not in Eretz Yisrael, whether you are North America, United States of America, Canada, doesn't matter. This coming off season is going to play a major role in your next season, in the next year you're going to have, and wherever you're coming from. I'm going to point out three things that we have to focus on for the goals, and we'll discuss them each one at the right time. Number one is Ben Adam L'Chaveru. Number two is Ben Adam L'Makom. Number three is Ben Adam L'Atzmo. I don't think it's translation, but I'll do it anyways. This is how you relate with your fellow man. This is how you relate to you and Kadosh Baruch Hu. This is how you relate to yourself. All three are very crucial elements of which each one of them has to be properly thought about and planned for to make sure that your goals for the summer are reached and are achieved properly. Before I tell you about any particular thing, I tell you the most important thing you have to know. Rule number one is that you have to have realistic goals for yourself. If you do not have realistic goals for yourself, then the whole discussion we're about to have right now, and any plan that you go through, anything at all, is a complete and utter waste of time. You have to be realistic. The reason why I say that, because let's say you set your goals really high. My goals are, I'm going to finish Bubba Basra this summer. Now, Bubba Basra is, they call it Bubba for a reason. You know what I'm saying? Thank you. Bubba Basra is not as big. It's very big. You're not finishing your goal in the summertime. Maybe Mishnayos. You should all finish Mishnayos in the summertime. But it's not finishing the Masechta. Your goal is, I'm going to do 10 Da'atim a day, Bubba Basra, this summer. When you do the first day, you sweat, you do 3 hours, and you get done a da'at and a half. So you get frustrated. And the next day you try, you have to make up now another 7 Da'atim, eight and a half Da'atim today. And you get done another 3 Da'atim again after working 7 hours. So you realize, my God, I stink. And all of a sudden you get depressed, and you realize that my goals stink. I can't do it, I'm not going to make it, and it just snowballs into a very, very negative feeling. That you don't want to have. And the opposite you don't want to have either. Imagine a person who sets very, very goals that are very, very achievable, very attainable. Again, Lahabdil, again, I mentioned to my guys at the beginning of the year that the goals I set when I went to Yeshiva for the year were very, very minor goals, which I realized after a few weeks I had achieved. If you let your goals remain very limited and very minimal, so at some point in time, if you let that be your goals, so you're not properly exercising yourself to prepare for the next stage. If I say I work out, I'm a seriously swift lifter. And I say, you know, I'm taking it easy, this all do easy lifting, I'm going to lift 5-pound barbells. Okay, I'm not lifting anything at all. I'm going to the gym, I'm doing a little bit, but my muscles are not being properly serviced. My body will turn from muscle maybe to a little bit more of pudge. I'm not exercising myself at all. I view the summertime as like Lahabdil, like a spring training. What do I mean by that? Athletes have 3 parts of their year. They have regular season, they have off season, and they have spring training. When an athlete is in off season, he lets himself go. Often. Some of the real great athletes, they push, they work, they have regimens, but many athletes come into spring training 25 pounds overweight, you know, 35 pounds overweight. They're slower than, that's what spring training is for, is to get back into shape, to get back into yourself. But as a Jew, we don't have an off season. Well, our off-season basically is spring training. Our band is about is spring training. We take everything much lighter. We got to wear our more relaxed clothing. You know, our Bermuda shorts maybe. Not in public, of course, but around the house. We can hang around the house a little bit that way. But it's not a time. You know, there's no off-season. It's a spring training. And in spring training, you can take things easier. You got to play only 7 innings of a 9-inning game. You got to, you know, you work on your arm strength. But you're not sitting back and doing nothing at all. There's no Jewish idea of taking a vacation that way. If I had asked Mosi what a vacation is, so Corey, give me a dream vacation. Keep things somewhat appropriate. Dream vacation.
Dream vacation.
Anywhere, money's not an option.
Hawaii.
What are you doing in Hawaii? What are you doing? That's it? You never thought about it before? Give me a dream vacation at all. Give me a dream vacation.
Tour Asia.
What?
Tour Asia.
I don't know what that means even.
Go around Hong Kong.
A tour. To tour Asia. That was a place. Tour Asia. Tour Asia. Good. Okay.
I don't like to travel. I've just seen one of those guys.
You like to travel?
I don't like to travel.
So why are you touring Asia?
I hear Asia. I don't know. The beach or...
I asked you. You pick it. You're touring Asia. You don't like traveling?
But traveling again.
Okay, if you want to, I guess. Money's not an option. People aren't an option. You want to travel? Where you want to go with me? Touring Asia? I don't want to go to Asia.
Where you want to go?
I don't know. So I'm picking now? So I'll pick it. So my adjudication, well, not really mine, but what people will tell you often, is go to sleep at night, wake up at 12 in the afternoon, you get to sit by a beach, separate beaches, with a margarita in hand, like flying out in the sun. Oh, what a vacation. Someone's with a fan waving you, feeding you grapes. Males only. That's a vacation. People will picture that. So the Judaism, it doesn't exist, such a concept. The word vacation, I think, and I don't think it's really true, but the way I view vacation is you ever go to, when you're in an airplane, you see a bathroom in an airplane, when it's empty, it's called vacant. Vacant means nothing. Empty. Zero. Most people will describe a vacation for you, it will not be touring any area of museums. Maybe people are more like you, sophisticated, intelligent, handsome.
Exactly.
So those people maybe, but most people besides that are not touring. They're sitting back, they're sleeping until 12. They're basically want to be dead as long as possible, not conscious, lying on a beach soaking in the rays, doing very, very little bit at all productively. That's most people's vacation. That's not a concept that Judaism accepts. I learned Musar one time, my father-in-law when my first year was married, so my in-laws used to go to the it's now called the Imbal Hotel, it used to be called the La Rome Hotel. So when I was there, it was called the La Roma Hotel. My in-laws would go, and we were very close with the Mashiach of the hotel at the time. He had a son who must have been at the time 7 years old. My father-in-law goes over to this boy, this Mashiach's son, 7 years old, and says to him, so he says, the rough name is Michal. The son's name, I think, is David. He says, David, how are you enjoying? He says, Hebrew, are you enjoying your vacation? He says, puzzled, vacation. He says, there's no vacation from Torah. He's a 7-year-old kid. Give my father a Musar. What does vacation mean? It's a vacation from Torah. So that they hearing that from a 7-year-old boy realizes there's nothing you can't vacate when you're an Eved Hashem. Like we mentioned, we heard this now this year about being an Eved. There's also you can't be a vacation from being an Eved. You have spring training. I'll give you a spring training, but I will not give you an off season. You can go stop at the 7 innings. You can throw and get your arm strength up from to 40 pitches instead of 100 that you used to. That you can do, but you can't sit in the beach. And I know Tom Brady, it was Tony Romo, was given a lot of flack think it was him, when, before a playoff game, he was spotted. They had a week vacation. He was spotted hanging out with his girlfriend, I think, in like a place of vacation. He said to him, "What are you vacation? The Super Bowl is in, or whatever. A big playoff game is coming up in 2 weeks from now, or a week from now, and you're spotted, you know, running off, having a good time instead of getting a good night's sleep, instead of making sure you're in good shape. What are you doing with yourself?" And he was given a lot of bad press for it. That's what we are, basically, every single Vayna's mind, is we are in that state of mind. Whether you're working, whether you're... If you're not in yeshiva, you are in spring training. Which means you can't push 100% full force, maybe, but you can't stop and do nothing either. That's not really an option that you have either. As a matter of fact, we have one time, I'm just talking about your press, one time in the Torah, Rashi refers to this, very beginning of Parsha, where someone wanted to chill, to relax. And Kaz Baruch says, "There's no relaxing, my friend, in this world." When? What was the Parsha? The first word is the word. Vayeshev Yaakov. Says Rashi, Yaakov wanted to sit b'shalva. He wanted to relax. He wanted to retire. What does that mean? It doesn't mean he wants to the beaches. He wants to put all the tests behind him already. Esav, put it behind him. Everything, put it behind him. I want to sit. I want to relax a little bit. I'll sit, like Judah said before, and sit and learn Torah for 8 hours a day. Relax. Kind of take things in myself. Says God's Baruch Hu, there is no time for you to be relaxing right now. Now, okay, for Yaakov, maybe there's no spring training. But for us, at least, you know, we're not Yaakov Avinu. We can never have an off season, but we can have a spring training. And our job is to figure out in our spring training what's the best way to make sure we maintain our shape, our trim figure, our stamina, so that when the next year begins and we have effort and work to put in, that we are not behind the eight ball trying to catch up like spring training for everyone else. Our Elul Zman should not be a spring training. Our Elul Zman should be as if we are mid-season form. And what do we do? What kind of goals do we set for our summer to allow ourselves to reach that goal? I'll tell you the greatest challenge, I think. The greatest challenge that we're going to have is you're going to go back to a place that when you last left, at least for a considerable amount of time, you were very different than you are today. I hope. You should all be. You were very different than you were, whether you didn't like learning as much, you didn't learn as much, you used to go to a place you don't want to go to anymore, whatever it is, you're returning to an area that you left in certain ways, not physically but spiritually, and now you're returning to the same spot right now. It's very, very challenging. I'll give you a muscle. Imagine a guy who is smoking, he's a smoker, and he goes to a school, he goes to try to wean himself off of cigarettes. And he goes to a place where smoking is not allowed. Okay, so for him, you know, he still has the desire to smoke, he really wants to be shaking. But after a week or two, and the nicotine patch, and the gum, and you name it, so he's basically weaned off it. Another 2 weeks there, he's smoke-free, feels good about himself, he feels very healthy. But when he goes back to his place of where he grew up, and he sees all his friends taking a smoke break, so now all of a sudden, like, he gets the shakes again. Because he was not prepared to be in a situation. He was good in his rehab center. He was good over there. But he was not good when he's thrown back in his face and he sees all these things going on. That's what's about to happen right now to all of us. Because we're going to have a vacation, or Vayna's mind we'll call it, spring training. Where we're going to be in a place when we've worked very hard on a number of things that when we go back home, they're not so inviting to us anymore. We're not welcome there. They're not as open to us behaving the way we have behaved in these scenarios. And the question is, how do we set goals for ourselves to guarantee as much as one can possibly guarantee that we're not going to make a mistake and fall back? I'll tell you one more story about this, and then I'll give you maybe some practical ideas and discuss a little bit. When I was in shul one time, my close friend's father-in-law was in shul, and I just noticed that he was davening with me by mincha, and then he didn't daven for the amun, but by marv he davened for the amun, he was saying kaddish. There was no one who said kaddish by mincha time except for him. No one else was a chiv, and only he was, and he didn't daven mincha. He says, "You know why I didn't daven mincha for the amun? You know why I didn't? I didn't daven mincha for the amun because I know that the minyan daven, even though I'm not nusach svar ashkenaz, but the minyan daven is nusach svar minyan, and it's very, very similar to nusach ashkenaz. If anyone here has ever davened nusach ashkenaz, but it was a shliach tzibur for a svar, nusach svar, you'll see that you get accustomed to saying words that aren't there anymore, or skipping of words that are there. Anyone has done this before? Anyone ever daven shliach tzibur at nusach svar when you are ashkenaz? You'll daven. You've done it before or not? It's very, you daven nusach svar then. So it's different because you're used to it. But I'm an Ashkenaz. Yeah, I adopt as an Ashkenaz. What's that?
You're adding in words.
You, well, who does? You do. Yeah. So if I'm not used to it, even so much as the Kaddish, the Svach, Prokhanevi, Krebi, Shechei, if I'm not prepared for it, I'm going to the next word like, oh my gosh, I forgot. You know, it's a natural thing. Why? Because when I get in my groove, it's only normal that I continue in my groove. When I get back home, I see my house, I see my computer, I see my bed, So my bed usually meant to me way back when. It meant I go to sleep at 3 in the morning. I wake up at 1 in the afternoon. That was when my groove in my bed is. And now you start to get back in your same bed and wake up at 7:30 in the morning? That's very difficult to do. Because by definition, that area, that place, the groove, the momentum that it took with you was by definition always going to take you to 3 in the afternoon, 1 in the afternoon, whatever. I remember myself on Sundays. My favorite day was a Sunday when I was growing up. I'd go to sleep at 1 in the morning, wake up in time for the Redskins game at 1 in the afternoon. Maybe have breakfast first also. I don't know. But it was not exactly full of productivity. It wasn't the case at all. So what's the pshat here? How are we supposed to go back to a routine that when we get back and we start saying the words again, we forget all the words that we started saying over here? Our nusach sfar that we've worked so hard to be part of our lives is forgotten over there. It's natural. It's very difficult for you to implement this in your daily routine, your daily schedule. That's the challenge that we have. So I'm going to give you some eitzah, some advice for this. Number one, I'll tell you that you can't resume your usual activities. I'm going to say something radical right now, maybe. But it doesn't reflect anything that you change necessarily. When you go back home, you're only going to go in the same routine if you look at yourself in the same routine. If you do something different about your routine, then you won't view yourself in the same way anymore. And your friends won't view you the same way either. I'll give you an example. I don't mean this to anyone particularly, but let's say that I used to, you know, I was a very relaxed dresser. I wear t-shirts all the time. You know, I wear shorts all the time. So I'm going to decide, I go back home, I'm not wearing shorts anymore. It's hot outside. But I decided that I'm not going to go and dress in a way where I'm going to get back in my routine. I'm telling myself I'm different. When I will go to davening, I will tuck my shirt into davening. I will wear, for davening, a shirt with a collar. I'm making these up. Only things, examples of things where I'm doing something to make sure I don't fall back in a routine that I'm used to doing. I'm going to make sure that I'm behaving in a way that I'm never going to confuse myself with prior to Israel to post Israel. I'm always going to know I'm different because I'm dressing differently. It does two things for me. Number one, it makes me realize that I'm different. And probably even more important than that is it makes everyone else realize that I'm different. By the way, I'm going to tell you something important. There's nothing wrong with being different. If you are not different, there's something wrong with you. If you do anything for a year of time and you're not different, that means that you failed in your year. If you went to medical school for a year and you're not a better doctor, that means you must not have listened in classes. Everyone expects you to be a better doctor after you went to medical school for a year. Everyone expects you to be a better lawyer if you went to law school for a year. And you can fill any other job. If you spend time with people, you should be closer to them after a year. Anything you do should make you a different person after a year. If you're not different, something went wrong during your year. You should not have to explain to anyone why you're different. The opposite. If you're not different, someone should wonder. You should wonder, what happened to me? Why am I not different at all? So don't be embarrassed, don't be ashamed, the opposite, embrace it. Now, dress in a way you're not used to dressing even over here, I don't care, it's fine. You're not flipping out, you're trying to remind yourself I'm different than I used to be. I used to go to shul in a shirt and a t-shirt, I used to not go to shul at all, now I go to shul with a collared shirt. I used to walk around to go to the shopping center in shorts, I don't do that anymore. Not because I'm so frum, it's not a frum issue. Because I'm reminding myself, don't get stuck in a routine that I wanted to leave behind in some ways. Doesn't mean I reject everything, but I mean I don't want to get caught up in my routine. I have to remind myself, I have to say, it's not programming permission, I have to say those things. I have to remind myself, I have to make a mental reminder every time I do that. So you make a physical reminder, it'll help you know better if you do that. It'll be a good way to try to make sure you don't slip into a routine that you're trying to avoid slipping into. And again, it's important for your friends as well. It's important for your friends to see that. They may look at you differently. What happened to you? You changed. I didn't change. I'm the same guy I always was. I just happen to like, you know, I like to dress a little more respectful. Okay? I don't think your friend will be like, what's wrong with you? How can you do that? And if he is, so maybe what kind of friend is that? Did he get over it in a day? Or if he doesn't get over it in a day, so he's not really a great friend of yours. It's nothing, I'm not saying anything radical. I'm just trying to explain to you that your job when you get back home is going to be that you should realize that I'm not the same person. I'm not trying to be the same person. And I don't get caught in the same routine that I once was caught up in. Okay. That's a challenge which I think we have to try to be aware of. Now, let's talk practical for a second. All three of these areas over here, there's a lot of practical advice I'm going to give you right now. Let's discuss very quickly. We'll start from the Bein Adam L'Chaver. We'll break this up into two areas. Family and friends. Break it up into two areas also. Each one, two areas. Family is parents. We call, let's say, siblings or others. And friends, we'll do boys and girls. Now, here for the girls, you should be in summer loving, my friends. It's the other sheer. I'm not saying that so much right now. It's going to be radical, especially with people listening. But I'll tell you my own take on these four issues. Regarding parents, when I grew up, When I was growing up, one of the troubling things for me was that I was awful. Keep it out of aim. I was probably. We spoke about how he was the worst student, whatever. I was the worst son to my parents that probably ever lived. Now I say that maybe with a little exaggeration, but only a little bit of exaggeration. I was an awful son. Like, I didn't do things for my parents. That's probably most of us. But I was disrespectful. I didn't listen. I ran away from home one time. I didn't go so far. I ran down the block to my friend's house. And the mother called. My mom told her I was there. So it wasn't exactly like running away from home. But I left my house. I slept there. I didn't come back home for the night. You know, I was not a good son. When I came to Shalom, I decided that I'm really a bad person. I'm a bad person. I really should work on my parents, my media. I owe them so much. So I bought a Sefer called Kibbutz Avim, appropriately enough. And I learned it. I learned it the whole year. I learned it, and I'm not an expert right now, so I still make mistakes. But I can tell you, my wife is always, she always says, I'm precious, and I'm Kibbutz Avim. Because my parents are a lot of fun, so I'm saying, it's not really need Kibbutz Avim. It's hard to do it. But it's something I've worked very, very hard on. You have an opportunity. You have not been home for a long period of time. You may be home for a little bit here or there, but when you're not home for a period, you're visiting. It's easier to get along with your parents than when you're home every day. You see them day in, day out. They ask things of you. They want to take out the trash. They want to clean your room, whatever. It's hard to have to get out of any of those point times. You should know, when I was younger, I'd go to my friend's house, and my friend's parents would say to me, you know, I would get up and offer to, you know, help with the table. By my own house, my mom would be like, can you help with the table? Like, help with the table? Can you, mom, I just sat down. You help with the table. Well, what's wrong with me? I'm the kind of son of mine. My friend's house, I'm offering to help such a good, nice guy. My own parents. Flesh and blood. They gave me life. They gave me diapers. They gave me clothes. They gave me food. They paid for me for everything I did. Mom, why shouldn't you do it? I was here. You're here. You want it. Why don't you go get it? I doubt going to send that to my parents. My dad. I'm sitting on the couch together. Avi, go upstairs with me. Get me a book. A book? You want the book? I don't want a book. We're both sitting here. Why don't you get the book? Can you imagine talking to your dad that way? If you can, it's inevitable. You're probably as bad as some Zion. If you can't, so then you probably wonder, what the heck is wrong with your growing up? Where'd you grow up? I don't know. I don't know what happened to me. But all I can tell you is that was something I never understood. Why was I so mean to my parents, or not nice to my parents? And I was a lovable kid to everyone else's parents. And it bothered me so much, and I'm docking away on my way to make sure I learned about it, I worked on it, and I made some steps, but I'm pretty good at it right now. I try very hard. I make mistakes also still, but I try very hard. The opportunity now to keep it out of aim to your parents that you have not done for a long time. And your parents are probably very worried about you. You probably think you're crazy sometimes. You may bring custom to the house, I'm not used to maybe. You know, they'll look at you as if you were rejecting their way of life, possibly some of you. Depends on where you're coming from. That's, I don't know, nothing for anyone, but it's possible these things all may run through your parents' minds. They're worried about it. They haven't seen you in a year. They've seen you, but they haven't really spent time with you as much. They see you doing things differently than they did before, and you're going to shul, and they're not going to shul now. You ask them to go to Minyan when they didn't plan to go to Minyan with you. So it could be very difficult. They go to restaurants and you decide not to go to one anymore. So it's very hard to do. You have to find a way that your parents now are your priority number one. I'll even give you maybe a piece of advice. You should make a Seder, like I'll tell you soon, very soon, about learning. You should make a Seder every day at Kibbutz Avim. From 9 to 9:30, when you go home, whatever it is, or let's say 6:30 to 7 or 4, whatever, you can figure out whatever time you think is most productive for your family. Make a Seder of a half hour for minutes every day of your Kibbutz Avim time. So we have a Seder of going to davening every day, of halacha every day. You should have Kibbutz Avim Seder every day. That you dafka designate a certain amount of time in your day that I'm going to dote on my parents. Sunday morning, I'll go to the store and get them milk if they want. I'll make them eggs, anything they want. For a half hour, I am your Evan. I mean, I'm not saying that literally, you're not a slave, but I'm going to be soaking up every mitzvah that I can. You can pick whatever time is best for you, convenient for you, convenient for them. Obviously, it would be nice, and after all, it is keeping up an aim, it should be nice to them also. But you're picking a time when you are going to be doting upon them. What's that?
3 in the morning.
Exactly.
Every.
They call you on that. I don't know if you want to say that. That's one thing I think is important to do, is you have to have a Seder. Keep it out of the game. Is anyone right now who's not sure why it pays to have your aim? We can talk about it later on. Again, Nebuch, I didn't realize it when I was younger. I don't know why. I'm not sure why I'm the biggest moron in the world. For some reason, I didn't grow up with that brain that was lacking in me, and I worked on it a lot. But I think hopefully I've overcome most of that. That's something very important to do. Siblings. I went to I taught in a school in Florida. I taught in a school, a day school in Florida, where Ellie Barris, Ryan Rosenbaum, Anoush, and Michelle all went to school as well. So I was there before they were there. I left. By the time I left, they weren't there yet, and they came afterwards. Anyways, one of the principals in the school had a very interesting theory. She felt that you could always tell how a student was going to do based on their older sibling. Is anyone here the youngest in the family? Youngest. So for you, it's not going to apply as much. You're youngest by what, 2 minutes?
What?
It doesn't matter. You're youngest by how long? 2 minutes? 3 minutes?
I have an older brother who's 24.
Okay, I know. Anyways, it may not apply as much to you guys, but for everyone else in this room right now, her theory was that the youngest sibling, the older sibling, will often dictate religious level of the youngest sibling, more than the parents will. When a sibling of yours sees you come back from Israel for the year, for example, and they'll see how you did and what you did, they're going to be very much affected by it. Even if you have older siblings besides you, you being an older sibling will play a very large role in their religious excitement, their religious interest, and their religious growth. Even if you have no intention whatsoever to be a role model for them. By definition, they saw what you were like, they see you right now, they're going to watch you like a hawk, whether you like it or not. Even if you're not so close to them, they're going to notice things. Younger sibling is very, very impressionable, and they watch very closely their older sibling. And therefore, I want to let you know that when it comes to family, not only will you be playing a major role, hopefully with helping out your parents keep it out of aim, as we mentioned already, but you're going to play a role of being a real role model for a younger sibling.
I think he said
the youngest. Yeah, sometimes he's not shy to you as much because you have no younger siblings. Oh. But someone who's old, who's younger siblings, so they can appreciate the fact, hopefully, that their behavior is going to be very, very important and crucial. So that even though they don't understand why or how, trust me, I've seen my own eyes, when you have an older sibling who did well or who's working hard and people see it, the kid themselves, or the younger siblings, will sometimes view growth and production and productivity after what you've done, and they'll be very, very, very impressionable and grow in such a fashion. I think it's important to keep that in mind. I wanted to highlight these 2 points regarding Ben Lachaber for the family. Let's talk now, friends. I'll do the easier one first. The girls, it's easier, I think. Now, I don't mean to make any radical statements right now. If I'm offending you, I apologize in advance. At this point in time, I'm going to make a statement which you may disagree with, but I don't believe at this point in time that there's any purpose in having, first of all, in platonic girlfriends. I don't think they don't exist, really. And if they do by you, maybe not by her. And therefore, I think, I'm a big believer that if you have a girlfriend, you can, this part, I'm not saying I condone girlfriends either. But if you're dating someone and you intend to marry them at some point in time, so, you know, at some point I'm going to get married, why not? Assuming that you're of an age when you're growing and you're trying and you're productive together and you're helping each other grow. Okay, I'm not, whatever, that's young for me. You're a little younger than I would expect to get married or be involved in that, but that's what you are. But if you don't, there's no reason that you should have friends with girls at this point in time. Now, that being said, you know, when I was here in Israel, so I basically dropped my girlfriends. Not for religious reasons. It wasn't because I didn't want to talk to girls, it's because...
Friends.
What's that?
Girlfriends.
I mean, the girls I was friends with, I didn't have a girlfriend. I dropped her much earlier. But the girls I was friends with, I dropped them also. I stopped speaking on the phone with them. I didn't have a cell phone like you guys do, so it's different. For me, I had to wait online, and I had to get a phone call and come to the phone. It was different. But even then, a girl usually talks to you for a period of time. They're not usually like, hey, what's up? Everything's going well? Yeah, good. What do you do for Shabbos? Okay, see you later. That's not what girls do. Girls just speak to you for like 35 minutes about the same thing, but 35 minutes it takes in order to get there. 45 minutes. It's a different conversation that you have with girls. Very different. I think that at that point in time, it's not a lot of productive things that come out of a relationship with girls, at least not things that are healthy productive. When you're ready to start dating for your marriage, I hope you date a girl you know already. It's easier that way. I'm not against going to for opportunities and meet people in co-ed environments, so that's why I'm not against those things. But I am against stopping and keeping a relationship with girls. Now, you can disagree with what I'm saying right now, you disagree with me, so then you can ignore what I'm saying right now also. But if you believe what I'm saying, if it makes sense a little bit to you at least, so I'll tell you that I think nonetheless you have to be a mensch. Say you see a girl there who's no problem talking to guys. And you have no problem talking to girls in general, but you don't really want to create relationships with girls. But she comes and says, oh, how you doing, Eric? How's it going? So you shouldn't be like,
that's
sort of embarrassing. It's not mentioned. You say, oh, I haven't seen so long. How are you doing? How's your family doing? Great. It's nice to see you. You know, we should really, we should catch up one time. And of course, you're not catching up with her, but it's a nice thing to say. You got a Shabbos meal with somebody. There are people I know like this. There are boys who I know like this that will not look at a girl. They won't look at them. Like, you know, even a waitress at a restaurant. Someone called their, you know, the waitress like, can I get you? What would you like to order? And they're like, could you please get me? Like, they're looking at like down. Listen, you're a human being, they're a human being. Assuming they're not dressed in an extremely inappropriate fashion, you can look at someone, you can say to them, you know, I'd like the Diet Coke, please. That's it. It doesn't demand, you're not asking to marry you, not even going on a date later on. It just, you're being a mensch. You're talking like a person who talks to a human being. There's nothing wrong to talk. Girls are also humans. And I believe that you can also communicate with a person. If you walk by someone, you can say, hi, nice to see you. You know, send your brother my regards. And then you leave. That's it. No harm done. If you feel like there's harm done, then maybe you shouldn't do that. But if you're able to go and continue on your way and not be affected by that so badly, which most of us should be able to do, then you should be a mensch. You had a Shabbos table with someone that you know from back in high school, and she's talking to you. You can't ignore her. It's wrong. It's rude. You don't sit there and play cards afterwards. You know what I'm talking about, right? But you should still be like, you should still be friendly. You should still be friendly. You should still be nice to somebody. Mechila?
No.
What? That's the easier one. How about boys? This is a much harder one. Because there are guys who you're friends with who didn't necessarily go to Israel for the year. Or if they did, they didn't do well in Israel for the year. And you used to hang out with them all the time way back when. And they want to spend time with you again. And they're good friends. And you kept in touch with them the whole year. And some of you guys may not, your friends aren't like it, but some of you guys I know your friends are like this. And they want to go with you the same place they used to go with you. And you care for them a lot. And you have a lot of history with them. So now what do? You call you up to go to the movies with them. Let's assume that you don't want to watch that movie. The movie's not appropriate. It's a movie that's rated R not only for violence or language. You've decided long ago that you're trying to wean that out of your life. But my friends ask me, I don't want them to think I'm... So you should never reject your friends. Ever. You will be the most important... If you remain true to your religion, you'll be the most important thing for your friend in the future. Is you. Because you are his lifeline to religion. And one day when he's going out with a girl and whatever, and he'll speak to you and ask you questions as a religious Jew. What do you think about X, Y, and Z? You know you're not a rabbi, you're a regular guy. Rabbis are also regular guys. But I'm saying you're not in the business. You're in other businesses. It's fine. But you will be your friend's lifeline to religious Judaism. You should not reject your friend. You should be his best friend still. But you should also not compromise your principles. Which means that you should do one of two things. You make your own schedule with him, you go out for lunch during the summer with, you know, it's much more innocent than maybe going out for dinner and a movie afterwards. Go out for lunch. Meet him for lunch. Or you and another friend of yours who was a buddy of his who also went to yeshiva should go together with him somewhere. Because in that case, it's not you versus, not your wants versus his wants. It's the two of you who never, you're together, will support each other not to do anything that will be too big of a mistake. But it's very crucial that you should remain close with your friends who are boys, even if they do not like you anymore. They're not like you. One of my closest friends today, I don't call close friends, I don't speak to them that often, once a year maybe. But I consider a very close friend of mine. And when I went to Los Angeles maybe a year ago to perform a wedding, he picked me up, we hung out together for a number of hours. One of my close friends is a non-religious stand-up comic who is the filthiest, most disgusting tongue I've ever heard in my life. Like, I watched him on YouTube one time, I felt like I would take a shower afterwards. Disgusting. The guy says to me this, he was given, he's a very funny guy, he was given television offers. That he should be, have a show. He should put his stand-up routine on television. But it required that he should cut back on his inappropriate lines, his cursing and his innuendos and disgusting things. He's like, he says to me, who do you think I am? I have principles. I'm not copying my principles to go on television. Like, what are your principles? That you curse so much? Are your principles that you can't tell a non-dirty joke? That's your principle, standing up. That's what you will not compromise, is your dirty jokes. Good for you, my friend. Good for you. I'm proud of you. I made jokes to him, like, that's your principle right now. Is that you're like, you won't? Okay, so Nebuch. But I call him every year of birthday, February 12th. I give him a call every year. You know, whenever I'm in town, which is not often. He's from Maryland also, so we go to Maryland. We were like mom's best friends back in high school. Best friends. He was a year older than me. He was in BMT. I used to go visit him when I was a child. I used to go all the time to visit him. We'd have a great time together. Now, Nebuch. Fine, but so what? So I can't be his friend anymore? I can't be the friend that he wants me to be, but I can be a friend. I want to be him. We have spoken in the past often about God. He rejects completely. But at least we speak about it. At least one day, if he ever has a second thought, he knows he can call me on the phone anytime and I'm always there for him. You should not reject your friends. But you should never compromise your own personal behavior for your friends. And there's two ways to do that. Again, I mentioned already. Number one way is that you should do things, let's say, in a very innocent type of time. In an innocent way. Like, lunch is a little more innocent than dinner is. Or Shabbos is a little more innocent than Sunday is. You should do things in an innocent way. You should go to times that are more convenient for you religiously. And if that's hard to do, so you should go with another guy. You should go with another person, another guy who, let's say, succeeded in yeshiva, another yeshiva bacher. And the three of you can hang out like old times, but in a way that two of you are doing things in a certain way, he's not going to feel like you're not going to feel so, I don't know, he wants to do it, maybe I should do it. You two guys will be there to support each other and not do anything that's too radical or too any inappropriate behavior at all. I think it's important still to keep in contact. Okay. That is regarding the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Vedat Malakum, I'll go very fast for the next part here because I'm running out of time a little bit.
Vedat Malakum over here requires a number of things. Sorry, Vedat Malakum. Yeah, Vedat Malakum. Number one, first thing Vedat Malakum I consider is minyan.
What I mean by that is as follows. There's never a day you can go somewhere without a minyan. You can't not know where in advance where you're going to daven. It's not possible. If something happens when you sleep late, okay, those things happen. But to plan in advance going somewhere on a trip or whatever it is where there is no minyan for you, that you have to require you to take a second thought if you want to do it. Now, if you want a hiking trip where, okay, so maybe you're going to see beautiful. I'm not telling you to do it or not. I'm saying, I understand, but to go to your friend's house where he's not going to go to minyan and you don't have a car, and so you can't go to his friend's house at night. You can't go. Simple as that. If you go somewhere, you have to go to godaven.com and you can check out what minyan are in the area and find out what's there and then go. And if your friend's not going, it's okay. You can go anyways. But you, as the first start of your day, as a Ben Adam Malkum, when you go to Eretz, you go to Chutzlars, you leave Eretz Yisrael, a minyan is a necessity to your day. You start with a minyan, you have a minyan in the middle, mincha, you end with a minyan in Maariv. There's no sacrifice there. There's no compromising there. And if you go somewhere that's outside of your home base, you must in advance find out what are minyan times. If your friend says you want to sleep overnight, you say, well, no problem. What time is minyan in the morning? Minyan? What are you talking about? Minyan? You daven now? I daven now. What time is minyan in the morning? You daven now? Yes, I daven now. What time is minyan in the morning? You're not compromising it. And if you feel like you can, then you shouldn't go to his house. You go to his house after minyan in the morning. It's something you have to keep very much in mind. It's not compromisable. Good question. Question or not? Without a minyan? So the halacha, I think you guys already did this question, but the halacha is that if you're a consistent vasik and davener, so then you can daven vasik without a minyan. But if you just stam, you know, you want to daven one time, it's better to daven with a minyan than vasik without a minyan. I think that's a general practice.
Wait, is it better to do it individually or vadiki?
Then to daven with a minyan at regular time?
Yeah.
No.
Maybe.
Oh, that's later.
Ask for David, but I think that Rabbi David would tell you that if it was, I'm not sure. Best thing maybe do is daven vasik and then catch a, you know, a shot later on. But I imagine that if he's a vasik and davener, so he certainly should, you know, shouldn't pass up on that. It's a big deal. Okay. I'm going to get to learning for a minute now. There's three types of learning you should do. There's three types of learning you should try to focus on. I spoke to the guys about this already. But there's three things that you should, learning wise, you should really be focusing on. One is if you do any sort of yomis. What I mean by yomis is that you have a daily routine. You do every day you do Chavetz Chaim, or every day you do Shnayat Ma'amikra, or every day you do Halacha Day. You should never, your yomis have to stay with you even in spring training. Even though it's not middle playoffs, you know, Ben Azman for us is a spring training. We're taking a step back, we're relaxing a little bit. You should, it's okay, nothing wrong with that. But you have to, any yomi that you have, you must continue. Again, yomi is Shnayat Ma'amikra is a yomi, a daily thing you do. You know, so you do Mishnayos every day, two Mishnayos every day, that's a Yomi. Those things are things that you've already gotten in the groove in, continue them. There's no reason not to. It may be about 40 minutes you're there, Yomi things, so continue Yomi things. It's fine, you should. It's appropriate. Two is that you should look and do things that maybe are things you never were able to do because you had no time. There's so much getting here. So much getting. Fine, nechta, my gosh, we're ready to kill some. So okay, those things are finished already. You're not doing that right now. Most of you, at least. I'm doing Chazar again, but you should now do things that you like to do. You know, I always wanted to learn Tanakh. I always wanted to do some more Machshava, Jewish philosophy. Guess what? Now is your opportunity. If all year long you're saying to your day, I wish I had more time to X, Y, and Z, well, now you have the time. Find a topic that you haven't really addressed yet that you'd like to look more into. It could be Jewish philosophy. It could be more Halacha. It could be more Tanakh. It could be things on Tefillah. But pick something that you find, something you never have to do it normally, but something you want to do. It's, we'll call it, I don't know. Mashlibo Chafetz.
That's exactly what I'm
saying. That was your heart desires. Pick something that you wanted to do that you didn't have time to do beforehand. That's what you should do. Something, take it on, read a book, even an English book. Read an English book on Strive for Truth. Read an English book on Laws of Kashrus. Whatever it is that you think is going to be something that you haven't really done that you'd like to do more of that you have no time to do, so take it, do it. And the third thing is, and depending on where you be next year, this is a little different, but usually it's going to prep you for this coming year. For example, let's say you're going to go to Shana Bev, or you're going to go to YU this year. So in those cases, I would advise you to take the Baba Basra Mishnayos that the yeshiva gave you, and go through it. 10 prakim, put 3 Mishnayos a day, 50-20 minutes a day, you'll finish. All Baba Basra Mishnayos, it's not small, it's not so large, but it's something that you're doing that will help you next year as well. Let's say you're coming to Shana Bev, Or again, why you? So maybe you want to do Vakiyas Gemara. Maybe you want to do a little bit of the third paragraph of Gemara. Let's say you're not going to Shemabed. Let's say you're going to not why you're going to another school. Well, you may want to be doing a certain program there, or learning a certain type of hours there, or in a certain type of learning program. So why don't you start now? Let's say you're going to be doing Sota. So learn Mishnah Sota for the summer before you get to the Gemara. Or you know what? If you're not doing any of those things, again, so take a Masechet that's finishable and finish it in the summer. Again, let's do 10 Masechet. You can finish it in the course of a summer by putting together 40 minutes to an hour a night. That's it. Megillah, Rosh Hashanah, not so good. Makos, maybe Beitza, Titus. There's a number of them. You can pick 7 to 8 Masechtas you could finish that are not hard to do. You can use art scroll help. You can use a tape if you wanted to. It's a good goal to have as a means of just spending your summer in a productive and healthy fashion. Again, things are more prep, more hachana, preparing for the next year. Okay. I want to say a few more things quickly, and then I'll move on to Ben Al-Asma. There are two types of goals a person should be having in the summertime. There's something called a macro goal and a micro goal. A macro goal means he has a long-term plan. For example, like I mentioned before, I plan on finishing Makos. That's a macro goal. A micro goal is I plan on learning for 4 minutes a day of Gemara. That's a micro goal. That's a daily goal. I think that it's important to have both. You should have macro goals, things that you're hoping to do over the course of your summer. Imagine if you spend the next 2.5 months and you're able to finish Makos, Mishnayos, Bava Basra, go to 10 weeks straight of Shaima Gevecha Targum, learn half a Hilchos Shabbos in an English Sefer. Can you imagine that month spent that way? It'll probably take you to do all those things an hour and a half a day. Not a little bit, but for what you get out of the summer, that's fantastic. An hour and a half a day. It means you have tons of time for many other things you want to do. And you get so much done. If you do things real, you on after real learning, you can accomplish a tremendous amount. So make a macro goal, and then make a micro goal to fit your macro goal. If you miss part of your micro goal, let's say I made a deal, I want to learn an Amud a day of Makos. 22 Dapim, that's 44 days. I have the summer plus more time than that. And I missed a day. Don't do a daf the next day. Don't do a daf the next day. Your deal was an Amud a day, you do an Amud again the next day. There's no makeup time in micro goals. You can't make up. Because when you start to play makeup games, and you're shooting too high, I mentioned before, and I'm not here, but realistic. You're shooting too high, and you're going to fall behind even more, and you get frustrated, and it's awful. Be realistic. You have an Amud a day, you do an Amud a day. You miss last Amud, it's okay. It's not your micro goal, your macro goal is not ruined yet, unless it's mamash to the T, but simtsum. That's how the Gemara getting, but simtsum is mamash exactly. To get, I do Amud every day in order to get to that, that's already difficult. But if you do a Makos, Amud a day, you have room to play with a little bit. You go on a trip somewhere, you don't want your Makos with you, you can still finish it. You should have a macro goal and a micro goal. Don't compromise your macro goal, and don't make up your micro goal. Okay? I'll tell you this, the last eight I have about learning, we're going to have here is a macro goal and a micro goal. Macro and micro. The last thing I have over here is that when it comes to you guys, how many people here have been homeless at some point this year? You guys have been homeless at some point this year?
Has.
You have not?
No.
Besides that, everyone's been homeless at some point this year. Okay. If you were home and you tried to learn at home, either you were successful, which would surprise me, or you had a hard time, which was usually standard. To go home and to learn at home when you want to learn, it's very difficult to do. With the things we mentioned earlier, the routine issue. That my routine I'm used to when I go home is not to learn. And that seat I used to sit in over there, that seat I used to open the computer over there, I always watch TV in that seat. The seats are not seats that are brewing with Kedusha in your house, usually. Usually. I'm going to give you one very good eitzah, I think that will help you a lot in your learning for the summer. Is that when you go to shul and daven, you should stay for an extra half hour on them. Your learning is best if it's based outside of your house. Best if it is. Not always possible, but if you can, then you should try to do it around chakras. Mincha and Marif, which means say Shachar for extra 40 minutes. If you can, if you have a car, if you can do that, if you can walk home, say 40 minutes afterwards and do your Amud of Makos. And when you go to Mincha and Marif, come 15 minutes earlier to Mincha, do Shalai Mikra, say 20 minutes later and do Bava Basra. You're done. That's your job. You've been out of the house, you're in a shul setting, it's much easier, much more convenient. That's one thing I'll tell you. But if for some reason you can't do that, you don't have an extra car, it's too far from your house, it's not Shaykh. So I'll say one more thing. The Chabetz Chaim recommends this in the Sefer called Torah Sabbath. The Chabetz Chaim recommends what you should do, you should pick a place in your house that you never sit in. When you guys go to the YU or whatever college you're going to, your dormitory or your room, you should find a seat you don't sit in usually, and that's your seat for learning. Let's say I have a dormitory room. So, this is my dormitory. My desk, I work over here at my desk, where I work. So if I'm now going to try to learn, so I'm going to make sure to move my seat this part of the desk over here, and I'm going to learn like this because this is my base measure. This is my learning. This is my base. You should have a different place. And when you sit there, that means no funny business. I'm so excited. My house, I just got a new house. We just bought a new house. So for the first time ever in my life, I have a base measure. I have a room that I'm not going to. I don't plan to do anything but learning in that room. I'm not going to talk on my phone. Perhaps maybe a little bit. I don't want to talk on my phone in there. I'm not gonna read anything but Torah. I'm so excited to have a room where I sit down in the seat and all of a sudden I feel like I'm in a basement. Now I sit at my dining table, I eat there, I read the newspaper there, I talk on the phone there. I'd rather be in a place where that seat is it's mukdash to Torah. So I recommend very strongly that number one, again, do things around shul, it makes life much easier. And if for some reason you can't, or you have a nighttime obligation, you have to be home for some reason, babysit your younger siblings, as well as you have them. So find a place in your house. You never sit when you're younger. I never sat at the dining table. I always sat at the kitchen table, or the vice versa. So now the kitchen table comes to your basic manager. Whatever it is, whichever one you don't need to sit in, you don't spend so much time in. So you have no routine in that seat. So make that seat routine to learn in that seat. That's what you should do. That's a way to properly achieve your goals for the summer, is to find a way to create opportunities that learning is natural in the place where you are. So either in a basic manager, like do it around docking time, or a new area of your house. Okay, we're almost done. We're running out of time. I'm going to end up with two more points and then finish. Regarding Bein Adam La'atzmo, this is probably the hardest thing to do because you're the only person who's going to be able to do it, and it requires something you may not be used to doing right now. You have to do what's called a cheshbon nefesh. That means is you have to actually think about yourself. How did I do in this today? How I did in this today? You have to grade yourselves. You have to be a tough grader. Not cruel, but tough. Like real. You know what? Today I was not good to my parents. I'll show fathers this tomorrow. Or even tonight, knocking the door. Nah, I'm sorry, I wasn't there for you when you wanted to. I apologize. It was unintentional. That's what you should do. You have to do a chesed and nefesh, something very important. That's the way you're going to have checks and balances. You make sure that your chavera was appropriate. I didn't compromise anything. I wasn't mean to that girl. I behaved like a mensch. I just didn't hang out, but I behaved like a mensch. I went with that guy to where he wanted to go. I shouldn't have gone there. I'm so stupid. I can never do it again. If somebody tells me, I'm telling them mature. I know I can't do that. I'm not comfortable with what happened. So that is to make sure that you are comfortable with who you are. You keep, even if you want to keep a chart in your room, no one has to know about it except for you. It's not embarrassing. It's embarrassed about it. Check and make sure that you're doing a good job with your personal portfolio of religious growth this summer. That's what I'm nefesh. Something I recommend highly. It's not easy to do, but I think you should do it. I think that it's important to try to keep in contact with people who are role models religiously. Hopefully you're being here. I hope are people that think that way. Maybe it's your friends. You should try to contact your roommate from high school. You should be in touch with people who are role models religiously for you to allow you, again, make sure you are connecting to people who you think are going to help you or going to advise you properly. It's going to be very important to do if you're being on the asthma as well. And the last thing, One thing is that you should be a walking Kiddush Hashem. Even if you can't learn, let's say, for more than an hour and a half a day, and you're working for only 4 hours, which means you have a lot of spare time on your hands, doesn't mean that you can't be a source of kedusha to people around you. Besides the sin you make for your parents, besides that, when I was in Gruss, there was a kid in BMT. His name was Jack Zalta. He was an SY. So he was like this short, bigger guy, like a cute guy, like a real labeling guy. So he wasn't a big learner. But he felt like, he felt kadosh going to Israel for the year. He went back Pesach time. And he basically made his business to be a Kiddush Hashem. He would go into a grocery store to get groceries, and he would sit there for 3 minutes holding the door for everyone with his keeper right from a big black people up in front of his head like that. Good day, have a nice day. And everyone would be like, oh, what a nice man, what a nice special person. He'd go to the toll booth, you give him money, and you actually say to them, thank you. Or have a good day. And everyone else like what? He's talking to me? I can't believe you talk to me. No one talks to me in this job. Unless they ask for change or a receipt. I can't believe you're saying have a good day to me. What a nice thing to say. So you can be a person who's able to be a walking Kiddush Hashem. You're just a nice person. You don't have to be a Steiger. You don't sit there and carry a pocket mishnah with you. You know you could, you don't have to. But you sit there and you're like, you smile. Have a good day. Nice to see you. Everything okay this morning? No, it's not. Oh my gosh, what I asked you. That stinks, okay? We hear about it. I was like, fine, but you can at least be someone who cares and is a nice person and is full of Kiddush Hashem. The last thing I'll say, and this one I think is very important, and something that I think you should be comfortable with, you should allow yourself outlets this summertime. I mentioned spring training is not a full service major league game. Ben is not in spring training for us. We keep in shape, but we have less of a load. You should give yourself outlets. You like to play ball? Play ball every day for an hour. Go ahead. It's fine. You want to go to a game one time? So go to a game one time with a friend of yours. Even if one of these friends we described earlier, a friend who's not such a good guy, maybe, who's going to enjoy for the year, he's not, take him to a game. Take him to a baseball game. You know, hopefully you're not, there's no cursing of the umpires by him, but have a good time. Go to dinner, go to a restaurant, take him to a baseball game afterwards. Have a good time. Laugh about old times. And he'll see you're a mensch. He'll be impressed by you. You don't look down on him. You're a nice guy still. You care about him a lot. You're even nicer than you were beforehand. He may be impressed by that. But you want to work out? Go work out. Go jog. Have a healthy outlet. Those things are all fine. They're not only fine, they're recommended in Bain HaZman. It gets yourself a little charger, a little break. I think it's important to have outlets that you think are healthy. My final piece I want to say, and then we'll let you go, is I've only mentioned positives. I've avoided all negative discussion. There's also something called Sur Meirah. These are all Aseh Tov. I haven't discussed all about avoiding challenges that we have. I mentioned before that we have a routine that we're used to doing. Things that we know we're weaker in when we were younger. Could be we're weaker in television. We're weaker by computers. We're weaker by whatever. You can fill in the blank. You all know our weaknesses. We know each other's. We don't know each other. We know our own weaknesses. You have to leave, and you leave here. You have to say, what am I going to make sure I don't fall prey to that mistake? I'll give you an example. Let's say when I watch television, I watch television, I should watch shows I should be watching. I have cable television, I should be watching shows, and I know I watch them. Let's say you're not ready right now to say I'm not watching television. I'm not preaching to you right now. You decide, I'm not going to tell you. If you decide not to, then great. If you didn't decide not to, if I tell you right now you don't, you're not listening anyway, so I'm not going to tell you don't. What I'll tell you is this. Treat your TV like a yichud, like a grill. Meaning that you should not be alone with your TV. If someone's not going to walk around the house, then you shouldn't be watching television. If your weakness was television, you should not watch it in your room by yourself. You can watch it in the den, with the rest of your family, if they're around in the kitchen. If you watch television, so that's how you should do it. Do not watch television when no one's home that night, unless you're going to invite a friend over to watch with you. Or to do something. I don't want you to be in a situation when a challenge that you have, or your computer is the same thing. If your computer is in an isolated area, don't let people there, unless someone's around. You make sure that whatever concerns that you had in your life beforehand, when you go back to your routine in certain ways, you don't fall prey to those mistakes. You are a sur meirah. You avoid these possible catastrophes, which they are, because you'll feel awful about it. It will be something you did not want to do, and you feel like you let yourself down, and you don't want to go through this whole dilemma. So take it as if it's a girl, and have yichud, and have iser yichud with your computer, iser yichud with your television. You're not allowed to be alone and watch television. You're not allowed to be alone and go on the computer. Unless that's not an issue that ever bothered you for. If it never bothered you for, so you can know what I'm saying. But if most people, television is something that I don't recommend anyways. But if you're not going to listen to me about that, and I'm not telling you anything about this, you don't listen to me. But you should never watch it by yourself. Even if there's a game, I watch the game, invite a friend to watch the game with you. Because people have what's called, the new thing is called remote control, and you can actually change channels from the game and watch something else. And it's what you didn't intend to do. You wanted us on television. Oh, I remember that show. Oh my gosh, I remember that show. Do I remember that show? Oh my gosh. I don't want to watch that show, but I never liked it. And it's hard to stop. If you have a yichud issue, and it's not hard to stop because you never turn the TV on. And because you're dressing like a Ben Torah, we'll end off where we started. Because you're dressing like a Ben Torah now. Because you're making sure people know you're different than you used to be. You're going to be embarrassed if someone watches you do something you don't want to be doing. You can't believe you did that. I thought you were this one for the year. What happened to you? You'll never let that happen. Because you'll be so careful to make sure that your goal is set for yourself. Whether it be Be'ad L'chaveiro, with all the dimensions, make sure your parents, for your older siblings, don't leave your friends out, include them in your life in your way. On the muckle, where you're not compromising the minyanim, you're learning these things that you want to do in a way that you want to do them, and with clear goals in a way that's most productive to do them. But on the last level, make sure you check yourself properly. If you do these, plus your sur meirah, then our summer is not a time of bein zman, a vacation where you're vacant, but the opposite. It's a spring training where you're building up your strength, so when the year begins, you're out of momentum already, able to go and grow in a way that's productive to make us the best Jews we can be. We should have a safe, healthy summer.
Bye. Whoa,
Belly,
it's not over. You skipped something.
One second, which was over.